Oh, Doug Jones.
Doug Jones.
Bravo.
Douglas.
Yep. This is a rare pre-ending clap. Doug Jones. I'm not going to even stop it. You know how I'm a stickler. Ugh.
Sean says the Hocus Pocus 25th anniversary Halloween bash of 2018, Sarah Jessica Parker revealed that she actually ate a spider.
Like a literal spider?
Like a literal spider.
A literal spider.
It's not like they had like a zoom in on it. Like,
no.
Why do something like that unless you're just very committed to your role?
She is a secret method actor.
Okay, so Allison trips on a oven and then she goes, oh, I have an idea. And now we enter a scene. You want to know what I call it?
What?
Killing it.
Because they go to a kiln. So they fade to an image of the school. And Mary says, this is smells of children.
It's a prison for children.
That's what Winifred says. And so they go into the school. And Max finds his true calling, being a shock jock. Because he lures them into the school. And then Binks takes over and has them chase them to an area, and then they start hearing like this French audio thing
from the library. Where is the bibliothèque?
Right, and it leads them into a furnace.
And I refuse to believe that a public school has the budget for a walk-in kiln.
I mean, yeah. I mean, not unless it's been there for a while. Maybe they splurged on it in like the 1960s.
The witches go in. They find a boombox. They're locked inside and the kiln is put on full.
And they go ahead and get burned
and
alive.
Like, which I think is a cute gag.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Pitch did not like that. and then here's my problem that happens in horror films or even baby horror films like this or any movie in general. Leaving before you know that they're dead.
Right.
Anyways, then we have a precious cat sister moment where Binks is like, love her. Because she's such a, you'll never have these moments again.
There's a celebration outside of the school.
Yeah, the girls are doing like somersaults and celebrating, and the boy and the cat are having like a heart-to-heart.
Right.
In front of, the girls are in front of a fountain.
Yeah. Fountain.
Tell me about it.
So you had made a comment about that fountain and it being like the Friends fountain.
Yeah.
That was the Friends fountain. It was used in the opening credits of Friends in 1994.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Where is that fountain? What's the name of that fountain?
Sean just says the fountain in the background was also used in the opening credits of Friends. That's all it says.
So no one told me life was going to be this way.
So no one told me life was going to be hexed this way.
So, yeah.
Your spell's a joke. You broke.
Your book's taken away.
Seems like your broom is stuck in second gear.
When it hasn't been your day, your week, your century, or even
300 years.
It was really good.
I'll be scared of you.
When the zombie starts to crawl,
I'll be scared for you.
When the liquid death rain falls.
Do I have to continue?
No.
That's pretty good.
See, improv.
I need to take an improv class. So I suck at improv.
You are lovely. Don't doubt yourself.
I suck at improv.
I mean, sucking at improv is what makes improv good.
Yeah, but like I can't come up with that.
I mean, like, but what was that?
That was like.
It wouldn't get us on Whose Line Is It Anyway?
No, but it could get you on YouTube. Oh. That's like at least a solid six-figure view count on YouTube. That's high for us.
I'm on TikTok, and I have not ever broken 800. Not that I use my whole ass on TikTok.
Okay, so Danny's talking about how my kids are going to take care of you, Binks, and my kids.
Because we've made it home.
Yeah.
Jell-O mold.
Oh, yeah.
They walk in. They're like, Mom, Dad, Jell-O mold. Allison's with them. Oh, yes. And now what you were saying.
And so they're kind of just like settling in. Like, what do you do after you've killed three witches that you've brought back to life, do you just go home and sleep?
As an eight-year-old, you make promises to an immortal cat.
Yeah, like, you know, drinking milk all the time.
And tuna.
Tuna.
God, can you imagine an immortal cat's gaseous milk farts?
Mm-hmm. So then Allison and Max, you know, cuddle up to next to each other.
Because Danny's falling asleep in Max's bed. We go back to an outside exterior shot of the school, and they do a reverse animation of the smoke. Like, they just reverse the smoke animation from before.
Right.
And the green smoke goes back into the chimney.
Yeah.
And the witches are like, ah!
And then they come out, and Winifred's just quoting French. And she's, like, patting herself down because they're not actually dead.
Yes. Because they've been to hell. What's a little bit of fire going to do for them? But mm-hmm. as they go, and we cut to the bullies sitting on a we see the teepee hanging down from a tree.
Yeah.
And they're sitting on the car, and they're like, what should we do? They establish that it's
three in the morning.
It's 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the bullies are being super gross.
They're, you know, teepeeing a house, which is the worst thing you can do, because then you have to clean all of that up before it rains.
Dews in the morning. You're gonna have to wet toilet paper.
It's the worst. Then Mary smells out Max on the shoes.
It's super clever, right?
Yeah. But it's not him. And so they walk away. And one of the bullies makes a comment, why does all the ugly chicks stay out this late? And I take offense to that because I have a job that keeps me out late.
Well, I have insomnia that keeps me up late too. Yeah. So, like, whatever. But, like, Winifred cannot stand that. She turns around.
Yeah. And they probably make some joke about, like, you know, playing with them or anything. And then it shoots back to them in the house, mm-hmm. and they have the bullies in cages.
Yes.
It's pretty satisfying whenever you see a bully getting their comeuppance.
Yes. Hold on a second. Okay. So is this where
they're trying to remember the potion?
Yes. And Bette freaks out, and she's just like, I can't without the book. I just simply can't do it. And is this the part where she lays down and she's like, oh, if only I could. Oh, no, this is not that part.
No, she goes over to the window, opens it up, and she says, book.
OK.
And the book I opens up like, oh, yeah, I totally got to do this thing.
Right. He's taking a nap. There's like, I am just.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they are in the most uncomfortable sleeping position ever.
Yeah.
She wakes up. We establish that it's 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, I got to get home. Allison's like, I got to get home. And then Max is like, well, I wonder if there's some way that we can help Binks. And she's like, maybe this book. And he's like, we were supposed to not mess with the book. She says, but now the witches are gone, so we could probably use this book. And he's all like, okay. Just be careful, he says, as a dipshit. Right.
And then she opens it up, and there's like this glowing thing that we see. But they specifically say,
well, nothing weird's happening now.
Right. And that's when it shoots back out. You see the camera out where the house is, and you have this light comes up from
as a beacon.
As a beacon, because he's got that little like knob at the top of his room.
He lives in a little lighthouse, which is why his room is nautical themed, but only halfway decorated because he's only been there for a week.
Right.
And it's stupid, but it makes sense visually.
And and then we cut to Mary comforting Winifred, mm-hmm. and Winifred's saying, please take me to the window. I wish to say goodbye. And then when they get out there, that's when she sees the beacon from the book, because the book and Winifred have a really strong connection, yo.
Yes. And I just, the way that Bette Midler just pulls you in, and everything's just, it's like perfectly dramatic, and the costuming and the verisimilitude of the entire situation, it just all comes together so beautifully.
Right. And she so when she sees the beacon and everything, she's like,
they opened it.
Yeah, we must fly. And Mary's closing the shutters like, fly on what? And then they go to the cleaning closet, and Winifred grabs a broom.
Uh-huh.
Sarah grabs a mop, like one of those floppy headed mops and everything.
Those industrial cleaning mops.
And then that leaves Mary with the vacuum cleaner. And so they fly off on these different cleaning equipment.
Yes. When they just like the way that Mary is like the last one out, and she's like, Winnie. And then the way that they take off with their brooms is they kind of like leap off the ground and then swing their item out and then between their legs to perform the flying action, as opposed to like hopping on it like a motorcycle or a bicycle like they do in Harry Potter.
Right.
But she clunks her junk real hard with the vacuum, and she says, oh.
And
it's subtle, but it's there. And yeah, it's funny.
It's hilarious. Also, I want you to remember that Mary got stuck with the vacuum cleaner for when you watch Hocus Pocus 2.
I will.
It's like my favorite. It's my favorite part of Hocus Pocus 2.
I'm so excited to watch this. Okay, so cut back to the lighthouse bedroom. Binks jumps on the book and he's like, "Don't do that. You should never do that. Nothing good can come from this book." But the witches aren't there yet. And so I feel like they should have been thrown off.
Right.
But whatever.
In the end, Max and Allison, you know, start getting ready to take Allison home. And they're, you know, like, where's my parents? The parents aren't here. And that's really weird. They generally aren't out this late. Blah, blah, blah. Oh,
no, I didn't understand what my note meant when I read nail v. bug screen. Because I read nail versus the bug scream. But you see a pointy fingernail cut down a bug screen. And I'm like, I hate it when bug screens are cut. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work. The bug screen doesn't work anymore.
Right.
It makes me vastly uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Even though nothing directly violent has happened, I'm like, don't wreck a bug screen. Then, okay. They have read in the book that a circle of salt is the only thing that can prevent the magic.
Right. It's the only thing that protects victims from the sisters' magic. And so they go downstairs to get salt.
The only real product placement that I observed, and I'm sure I'm wrong, but 7-Eleven.
Yeah. Shut 7 Up.
7 Up, like 2 or 3 6 packs.
There was also a couple of packages of Sugar in the Raw.
Oh, yeah. I love Sugar in the Raw back in the day. Because it was like, if I got that instead of my mom's Equal packets, yes.
Because it's like actual sugar.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh. And so Allison says something about ex-boyfriends.
Oh, yeah. This soul protects you against, you know, magic spells, something.
Oh, and she says, what about ex-boyfriends? Yeah. And he says, what about new boyfriends? And she's like, this is my interpretation of what happens. She goes, oh, that worked on me. And then they lean in for a kiss when you hear a scream.
Right. Again, this is a guy who kind of bombed out earlier in the day. And I don't know if I would be so open to kissing someone who bombed out like less than 24 hours ago.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd ever make out with somebody that I didn't know longer than a week.
Yeah. Yeah. We hear scream and
they run upstairs to he says, Danny. And they run upstairs.
Right.
They go to his bed where Danny had been asleep with Binks, peel back the covers. And Sarah goes, boo. And he goes, ah. And the closet door slams open and Winifred goes, looking for this, and holds Danny. And Mary goes, oh, this, and holds up a bag, which we assume has Binks in it.
Right. And Winifred also has her book.
Yes. And they like smash Max to the ground. And because Allison is holding the salt, she's just a real crazy salt circle. It would not pass muster on Supernatural.
Yeah.
She like swirls the salt around her. And when he goes, clever little white witch. And then
burst out of the roof.
Well, they do. But before that, Winifred says, come, my sisters, the candle is almost extinguished and dawn approaches. And then they blast out of the ceiling. Because what you should do as a villain in a horror movie, especially a Disney one, is announce your weaknesses before you leave the room. As they fly across the sky, Winifred says, sister, sing your song. I'm not quoting it, but like, sing your song to lure the children. And now we get to a part that embarrasses me.
Embarrasses you?
Because Jen called me out about it.
Oh, like, okay, so
little children, I'll take thee away.
So Sarah is singing
to a garden of magic.
This song on a broom.
Come in. I don't even have the lyrics right, but I wanted it. I wanted to be it.
Yeah, and it's, to me, it seems very seductive. Am I the only one who's seeing that?
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be pretty and nice and ethereal and also magical. So like, right. Even if you don't find it any of those other things, this is her magical talent. Just like Mary can smell children.
Right.
Sarah can lure children.
Yeah. It's very much Pied Piper.
Yes. And Winifred has the book and like, she's the one who uses like, hand magic, like she can zap things and like manipulate things, so telekinesis style.
Yeah. And so Max and Allison,
yeah, they're standing in the blasted hole of his bedroom,
and I think he's like, well, what are we going to,
he's trying to call the children to stop walking in one direction.
Well, I think before they actually get into the car, Max says, how are we going to stop them? And Allison gets like this like look on her face.
They're standing in the blasted hole and she just knows everything. She's right. Like, oh, I know what's going on.
Well, I mean, she's lived here her entire life. She's probably heard the story of, you know, like, and I mean, Winifred did pretty much say, we got to get this done before dawn.
Yeah.
So she probably knows some things. And what I like is like the before Max and Allison get to the, I know some stuff goes on at the house and I don't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
But like, what is it? Allison's knowing look. And then they grab the car and then they go over to the house. When the car shows up, there's this the camera is specifically on one of the headlights.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great planting and payoff in this film that goes on. And it would be easy to talk about that like forever for me. But I just kind of wanted to point it out because it was one of the more obvious moments that come up. And we find out later on, which we'll talk about. Why the camera was focused on that headlight.
Okay, so I don't know much about the census of Salem in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
So correct me if I'm wrong.
That seems like a small amount of children or too many.
This is what I'm saying. The film shows several dozen children. Adorable, adorable. We could talk about them forever because I love it when people mindlessly march in one direction. But it had to have been tens of thousands, if not 50s of thousands or like 100,000 children from the surrounding Salem area, right? Like all converging on one house.
Depends on the reach of her voice.
Yeah, but they're flying for several minutes and several minutes of flying covers a lot of ground. And I don't think that she knows about population density. So imagine her sweeping out over the countryside, except the countryside is now a densely packed urban environment. You know, you dig what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They should have no less than 5,000 children converging on their house right now.
Yeah.
Considering the size of the high school.
Right.
Alone.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, God. This is the plot. Okay, we're almost done.
Yeah.
Oh, too many children is what I'm saying.
Right. Too many kids. Too many kids.
This is also where my notes go. They should really be putting some speed on this. And that girl still has no self-preservation because she's like, you'll never get away with this. Blah, blah, blah.
She seems more proactive than the first sister, though. You have to admit, because she's like fighting. They had to tie her down. First sister, she's just sitting there.
She's like, submissive. She's very colonial.
Yeah. So. And so they brew a potion and they try to get her to drink it. But then Max shows up.
Yes.
And he's like, you may be powerful, but I am powerful, too. I'm just powerful with knowledge. And I know something you don't know.
What is that? Says Winifred.
Yeah.
Guffawing.
Yeah. And he says daylight savings time, which doesn't actually work for Halloween because it's actually like falling back, not falling forward.
Yeah, and it doesn't really matter. They don't know what that is.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, daylight savings time. Huh?
And then fake sunrise.
Oh, it's fake? They don't know that. They, in the same way that they start falling down when the sprinkler system goes off.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, no, sunshine.
I mean, it's kind of like,
oh, I'm dying.
Kind of like when something bad potentially happens to me, I freak out about it. Like, oh, no, my phone charger cord has gone missing. Someone must have taken it. You know, instead of calming down and being like, you probably just put it somewhere or it's underneath a piece of paper. It's more than likely under a piece of paper.
Look, I'm sure that's where Abe's Orca card is. So, okay. So here's my problem. So Danny calls him to untie her, right? And he's about to escape with her, right? But then the bullies who have been hanging out, they're in little cages on the ceiling, and we've talked to them a couple times through the sisters or whatever,
right.
And they're very upset. They're like, "Hey, Hollywood, save us!" And he turns around and he's like, "Oh, right." Now, mind you, he knows the witches aren't dead because it was fake sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, "Oh yeah." He turns around, takes his shoes off the bully, and then leaves them to die. And here's the thing: he has no way of knowing how the plot's going to progress. So all he knows is that. All Max knows is that the witches need a child in order to live. He has not killed them, and he's leaving two children in their presence.
Right.
Max is a sociopath, if not outright evil.
Okay. Counter with what would have happened if he had tried to get them free and the sisters realized that he was faking it, and then suddenly he's in danger. And so is his sister. And so is Allison.
I don't know. But what I do know is that murder is not right.
Right. It is a little bit gauche that he just took the shoes off of him. But as an audience member who knows, like, who knows that they're probably not going to get killed, like, realistically, you're on point with that.
Okay.
But as an audience member, knowing that this is fake, it is very satisfying when he gets to take his shoes back.
That is also a very good point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, and an important thing in this scene is that Dani has, in her struggles, she says, "No one will ever love you because you are ugly.
You sold your soul and you're the ugliest person who ever lived," or whatever.
Yeah. But she calls Winifred ugly, and that's important for later.
Yes. But the cauldron gets knocked over. Mm-hmm. And Winifred's like, "Oh, there's just enough left for one child.
And I know the child that I'm going to use this
not
on.
Not the two you've got locked up, not the thousands of ones walking up to you. The one who insulted you is the one you have to have."
Priorities of an older woman.
I call bullshit.
It is bullshit. Oh, do you remember what she says before the scene ends? "I'm going to have that child on toast." And that's when I was like, "Avocado toast?" And you said,
"Avocado toast." Yeah, by the way, Flutters, they figured out that since they hadn't burnt up, it wasn't actually real sunshine. And we cut outside and they peel the thing off of the light of the car. And then they all get in the car and they drive away. And he drives over a sign because he's a child and he can't actually drive a car.
Right.
And now,
a drive-in montage and bad police puns.
Okay, this movie would have been over and post-apocalyptic if she'd just eaten the kids that she already had.
Yep.
But she, and I don't know how much cultural osmosis you can absorb, but she goes, "Pull over." They didn't have pulling over in 1693, not like that.
Right. It's like, it's very much for the audience. It has no base in reality.
She goes, "You're resisting arrest."
How would she know that?
Cops weren't formed until those racist people did it in the South in like the 1800s.
Yeah.
So
you're like 200 years ahead of schedule, Winnie.
Really? But we do go to the graveyard because hallowed ground, and mm-hmm. we do what I call battle prep. Want to know what we do? We stick a child in a grave.
Oh, is this before we find out that Billy is the best character in this movie?
No, this is after. So go ahead. Yeah. Let's go.
Okay. So Winifred comes to the hallowed ground. Billy catches up and gets Max.
He's trying to fight him off with a pocket knife.
Yeah. Max is trying to fight off Billy with a pocket knife. And then Billy grabs the pocket knife, and then he cuts open the binds
instead of cutting Max like she wants him to, he cuts his mouth open.
And he calls Winifred a witch. Though maybe there's something else.
I
think maybe he said something else.
I think he said something else, too.
How about a...
One of Jen's rare swears. Congratulations to Plotters. If you want to hear Jen actually swear, please give us $1 a month. And you can listen to our unbleeped episodes.
I have a Sean fact. During the 20th anniversary screening of this film, Doug Jones revealed the moths that came out of his mouth at the end are not CGI. In a 2018 interview with Bloody Disgusting, makeup and special effects designer Tony Gardner said that the actor wore a mouth rig, a latex pocket attached to dentures that blocked off Jones's throat to make the moths come out. There was a small hole in the very back of the pocket so that Doug could cough some air through it. An animal wrangler would place several moths in the pocket with tweezers. Then the stitches would be glued shut and we'd run out, this is quoting from the makeup artist, and we'd run out of frame so that they could get the shot as fast as possible.
Oh, Doug Jones.
Doug Jones.
Bravo.
Douglas.
Yep. A rare pre-ending clap. Doug Jones. I'm not going to even stop it. You know how I'm a stickler. Ugh.
This man is so committed.
Consummate performer.
Any method actors out there who think they know what they're doing, you don't know what you're doing until you put live moths in your mouth.
Here's the thing. Sarah Jessica Parker ate a spider. Good for you. How about you take that bug into your being and then you let it live Doug Jones?
Yeah. Man's a saint.
A veritable saint.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why they let the moths live, but the spider had to die.
And here's the thing. If the spider died, why did they have the "no animals were harmed" in the making of this film?
Are animals insects animals?
I think technically... In terms of like filmmaking,
did they have to hire a moth wrangler?
Yeah,
yes, they did.
Then yes, insects are animals. So how did she get away with eating a live spider?
Well, this is an eaten spider.
Oh, it was pre-chewed.
That's why you can have eat a hamburger and still have a no animals were harmed in the making of this film sort of moment.
Okay.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Now we're to the battle prep part, okay? Here's how you battle prep. One, stick a child in a grave.
Correct.
Two, salt circle around said grave.
Right.
Three, bat.
Obviously.
A baseball bat, by the way. And four, zombie.
You need to have someone who has, like, very little chance of dying on your side.
Okay. All right. So, do you want the Naomi goes super fast through the battle scene, or do you have lots of commentary on the battle scene?
I don't have very much commentary, so feel free to go through it. Jen, do you have any notes, any Sean facts?
In scene.
Okay.
As we continue.
All right. Go
okay,
for it.
Okay, but, like, I'm about to run through the battle scene in five lines.
All right, then I'll read it after that.
Okay. Winifred grabs the bat from Max and chases him. Allison throws salt into Sarah's face and she's like, ah, it spins backwards in a really cool way. So Billy tells Winnie to go to hell and she says, I've been there. I found it quite lovely. And then Danny climbs out of the grave to help Billy find his head, which makes her vulnerable and she gets scooped up by Winnie.
Valid.
That's pretty, as far as I can tell, that's accurate, quick description of the next minute and a half of film.
Oh, you hadn't reached the point.
Okay, so awesome. So then Winnie starts trying to force the last vial of the potion into Danny. And Binks climbs up a tree, lands on Winnie, knocks, like, it's so cute. The cat paw just pushes the vial out of her hand. Max dives and grabs it. And she's like, give it to me, or the girl dies. And he's all like, you kill her, and I drop the vial. And so they're a standoff, mm-hmm. A Halloween standoff. And then Max drinks the vial. And I think that's actually his smartest move in the entire film.
Right. It also shows character growth because he was so like, I don't want my sister around. You know, he still loved his sister, but he didn't want to. Yeah. And it also shows where Binks failed to save his sister. Max succeeds to save his sister by making him the only one who Winnie can take.
Yeah, but I don't think Binks had a chance to do that.
No, he didn't. But he still, you can very easily see it as like
his biggest regret.
Well, he does. I think he talks about it.
Yeah, he probably does.
In the movie with the character.
No, I don't pay attention to the emotional parts.
Mm-hmm. That's okay.
I only pay attention to Doug Jones.
The only one you should pay attention to.
So Max gets grabbed and lifted up in the air. Now he's hanging from the handle of the broom and he like halfway falls. And then she's like pulling him up. And she's like, sisters. And all the time she's holding him, he's starting to glow. And she's like, which is like super weird. Imagine it without all of the magic effects. It's just right. Bette Midler sucking air at you.
It would be creepy. And so Mary goes over and they everybody else catches the cord on the vacuum.
That's exactly right.
And then Sarah comes over to help Mary.
And they're like, Allison's like, pull as hard as you can.
Right. And then the sun comes up and Allison says, let it go. And then they go flying.
They go flying straight up into the sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
And so between the two of them, Winnie gets knocked off of her broom and face plants onto the cemetery floor.
Right.
And my favorite part of that is that as she peels herself out of the ground, there's an imprint of her on the ground. And then Winnie pulls herself up and then spits grass out of her mouth. Yeah. It's so good.
I mean, it feels like when I get up in the morning, you're just like one hand, and then you lift yourself up.
I do that every morning.
So, and the, like, what is it? Winifred goes back after Max, pulls him up, and she's like sucking the life out of him, but she's on hallowed ground.
So her feet start to smoke, and she's like, oh.
Right.
And is that what turns her into a statue?
Yes.
Okay. But then we cut up to Sarah, who's like, oh, Winifred or Winnie, goodbye. And she poofs into, hold on. Purple. She's a purple poof. And then and then Mary, she's so cute. She's like, oh,
bye bye.
And then she is a red poof. And then the statue is such a weird face. I mean, I get it looks like the character, but it's not like a great statue. It's a little styrofoam carved out.
Feels a little cartoony.
Yeah. It's a little, with everything else done so incredibly well, the statue stands out as a bit of a fail. But it doesn't matter because it explodes in a green poof when the sunshine hits it.
Yes.
Max turns out to be alive. Great. My notes say. Great. And Danny runs over and is like, oh, I love you. And he's like, I love you too. And I know you've got siblings and I've got siblings too. And before you were adult people, did you spend a lot of time being like, and I love you?
No.
I don't even think a witch fight would make us say that to each other.
Yeah. Billy goes back to sleep in this most satisfying way of like just falling asleep in his.
Have a good sleep, Billy.
Thunk.
So cute.
And then Danny's like,
wait, hold on a second. Bye, Doug Jones. We love you.
Bye. And then Danny's going to look for Binks. And
he's dead because when he bapped the thing, he got bashed into a tombstone.
Right. But he, also, like, the curse is lifted because Winifred's dead.
Okay. And so then do you notice that he's laying on Emily's grave?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Super depressing.
Yeah.
But then also Danny throws herself on him. And if it didn't look exactly like when she threw herself down on a pumpkin, I would be a lot more sympathetic.
Yeah.
Max comes to comfort her. And then you hear, Danny, don't be sad. Don't be sad. And then he comes over and he's like, you see, I can go be with my sister now. And they hold hands for a second. And then he leans in super close into her ear. And you know how much I love the wet breath of somebody else on my ear.
Yeah. Yeah. You talk about it all the time.
I love it so much.
Yeah.
I love it so much in Opposite Land on Bizarro Day, which might be a double negative, but just know I don't like it. And he's like, I will always be with you.
And then he leaves.
He walks into the light with his sister, and his sister's like, Thackeray Binks, what took thee so long? And he's like, I had to wait 300 years for a virgin to save me.
I will note that they walk off into a sunrise, which is a nice change of pace.
Yeah. Epilogue!
Yeah!
We see, what is it, the parents?
They exit the dancing hall, and they're like, whoo, we thought LA people knew how to party.
Right.
Ugh.
And then we see the bullies still in their cages.
They start a round.
Yeah.
Row, row, row your boat. Row, row, row your boat. Row, row.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I hated doing rounds in elementary school.
And then we go to the book where the eye is open, and then it's freeze frame.
For the rest of the credits. Well, not the rest of the credits. For quite a bit of the credits.
Yeah.
And that's basically it.
Yeah. Nothing. No after credit scenes. Because this is 1993.
Yeah. But if you watch it on Disney Plus, like we did, the credits go on forever. Because it's in Deutsch and it's in Turkish. And it's in like all of these different languages. So I didn't wait around for the end of those. But I doubt there was anything good after that.
No, there wasn't. So
you waited through the end of the extended. No,
well, there isn't anything after it because that's those are the voice actors. So
okay,
they don't deserve anything after them. They're the greatest part of it. And that's the movie.
What movie did we just do?
Hocus Pocus.
It's been years.
Oh, it really has. Okay, Jen, load us up on our last shovel full of Sean facts.
Can do. There were 7 statues made of Bette Midler for the scene in which she bursts into the sunlight towards the end of the movie. To me, she looked like a weeping angel, kind of, a little bit. One of the statues, along with Winnie's spellbook, is housed at the Planet Hollywood restaurant in Florida.
Oh,
Orlando.
No. Did it flood? Is Orlando safe? Sorry, plotters, you probably already know.
So, yeah, there is a callback to a different movie episode that we've done. There's a different callback to the movie, to a movie we have done. The ballad hit Almost Unreal by Swedish pop duo Roxette. Is that how you say it in Swedish? Roxette? It's R-O-X-E-T-T.
Yeah, that's how it was always said growing up. So
it was originally meant to be included in the movie's soundtrack. Of the movies that we have reviewed, one guess each on what movie it would appear in instead of this movie.
What was the name of the song again?
Almost Unreal.
And it came out after 1993?
Could be even the same year. In fact, it was the same.
It
wasn't Free Willy, right? That's not my guess.
We haven't done Free Willy yet.
Oh, this is a movie we've done.
Mm-hmm.
Snacks. Okay, so the name is what again?
Almost Unreal, 1993.
Okay, I have my guess.
Okay, do you have yours, Lydia?
Super wrong. I think my movie's from the 80s.
We've only done 45 movies now.
I should remember all of them. Let me see.
I can remember 10 of them on a good day.
Just looking back at my notes
both
that
have
I have
before Jen tells us though.
I'm gonna go ahead and say the obvious answer.
Huh.
Which is not my first answer, but Monty Python and the Quest for the Holy Grail. It's obviously that.
Oh, my guess is Earth Girls Are Easy.
That was my first guess. But I was like, I don't know.
Wasn't Earth Girls or Easy in the 80s?
That's what I just said, Jen. I don't know. Is it in Baby?
I mean, the only other one that I can think of that came Fern out Gully. Around we this time was Batman Returns. But I thought that came out like earlier. Like it was in 2009 or 1992.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Tell it. Lay the facts on us, Jen.
Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, man, that was my pick. I should have guessed that one.
Yeah, you should have.
I also picked Earth Girls Are Easy, I think. So whatever.
Yeah.
All right. David Kirschner, who produced and wrote Hocus Pocus, also produced Child's Play in 1988.
That makes sense.
A sequel book released in 2018 revealed Jay and Ernie's fates. They were eventually rescued, and one boy went on to become the principal of the local high school. The other became a park ranger. So he could join search and rescue ops with the goal of helping lost and trapped people, since he knew firsthand how it felt to be in such a situation.
That's actually really well-rounded. Good for those guys.
Yeah.
And our very last Sean fact is about one of Naomi's all-time favorites. Sean Murray played the human version of Binks, and actor Jason Marsden voiced the character, both in his human and feline forms. In 2017, Marsden told the Daily Beast that producers dubbed his voice over Murray's because the actor sounded contemporary and they thought it would be more realistic if Binks had an affected accent from the same time period as the witches.
That would make sense. If you're an intelligent creature who can live forever, you would eventually change your accent.
Jason Marsden could narrate my whole life.
I think it's really interesting that you have the hots for both Jason Marsden and James Marsden. Who is Cyclops and other things. And
not as Cyclops. Lemons. No one has the hots for Cyclops. It's part of Cyclops' terrible story arc.
Yeah. But there's Liz Lemons.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. As him as Chris Cross on 30 Rock. 100%. He's like, hold on, Liz. I got to go beat up this skank in a purple sweater. She goes, I'm the purple skank. You said you had amazing cheekbones. And he goes, he's so good. Applauders. He just points to his own cheeks. And he's not wrong. He has amazing cheekbones. Anybody who had Goof Troop as a kid loved Max's voice.
Yeah, but it was the movie. It was only the Goof Troop movie.
Yeah, the show was all right. The movie was amazing.
Yeah, it was a different actor.
I have two lists that I might share with you. And I will let Lydia, because you picked the film, I'll let you pick which list we read first. Okay. Because one might leave a good taste in your mouth and one might leave a bad taste in your mouth, okay?
Okay.
One of these two lists, I'm going to read them both. So you get to pick which one's first, which one's second.
Okay.
Best supportive costumes or the word virgin count?
Word virgin count, because it's going to, like, let's just rip off this Band-Aid right now.
Okay. The first time the word virgin is mentioned is in The Hanging, where Winnie says, a virgin will light the candle and bring us back on Halloween. Okay. The second time the word virgin is brought up is when Max lights the black candle flame. He reads the plaque that says a virgin will light the candle on Halloween and witches will come back. The third is when Danny is all like, a virgin lit the candle in the cemetery, because I love how an 8-year-old is talking about virginity. The fourth is the three witches in the three witches about cemetery. Hold on a second.
Sarah says it on her broom after.
Yes, that one. I say three witches. I meant the sisters say it in the cemetery. Okay. The fifth time is to the cop, a virgin lit the candle. The sixth time is the cop to the kids, because I love it when adults say the word virgin to a child. The seventh time is, my brother is a virgin at the town hall meeting, at the town hall party to her mom, Danny to her mom. And the eighth time is, I had to wait 300 years for a virgin to light a candle.
It's kind of an unnecessary thing to constantly bring up.
Eight noticeable times, and you know my counts are inaccurate.
Right. So obviously that's more like 800.
This is a children's movie. Is it rated PG? Probably because all of that death and murder. Also, can we just note that like this movie is solved by the death of a child?
the Binks.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I wouldn't say
our
that.
The happy ending is him dying.
I wouldn't say that it was solved because he died.
The resolution is.
Right. The resolution includes the death of a child.
The what? Denouement. Isn't that what Sean said last time? The denouement.
Yeah.
Is the climax, death of the child. The come down from the climax is the cat dying. What's the rating, Jen?
It's PG.
Oh, yeah. I figured. Okay. You want to be lifted back up with the best supportive costumes?
Yes.
Okay. There is, okay, and these are people who are not main cast. Okay. The first one is The Room Full of Poofters, I mentioned before. Not because I'm maligning anybody. I'm just back in the day of these, the Victorian...
Colonial Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, Colonial Eyes Wide Shut. Yeah, just a whole bunch of, like, dandies walking around. And I don't mean that in any kind of, like, dismissive or condescending way. I just imagine a lot of guys pulling handkerchiefs out of their cuffs and being like, ooh, you know? Okay, there was Mrs. Potts. There is a spaceman with a very cool helmet. There is a demon bumblebee. I assumed it was a girl, but like she had this weird like witchy face and a bumblebee costume. And I call that the demon bumblebee. There is a Sonic the Hedgehog ripoff character. He's only got 3 spikes of hair. And I think the real Sonic has more spikes than that. But it's definitely a homemade costume. Definitely very cool. There is a little in what looks like a Mike Myers mask. So I call him Baby Mike Myers. There's a troll. Straight up troll. There's the three witches with the brooms, which all fly away. Super cute. There's a tree troll. I have to assume it's a tree troll because it looks like a troll, but there's a tree glued to its back. There's a Mad Hatter. There is a knight, but it's like a full suit of knight with a big feather plume. There is a, what I wrote down is Annie Oakley, but it is in fact Calamity Jane because we read the credits. There is not one, but 2 gators. There's a really like hard helmeted gator, but then there's like a floppy, felt gator later on. Okay, there's a crow, which was fantastic. There's a silver bunny that is like kind of like masquerade ball-ish. There's an Elvis. There's a boxer tiger, and I don't understand it. He's a tiger, like he's got a big mascot head, but he also has like a boxing robe on, and I don't get it. There's not one, but 2 Carmen Mirandas. One is stylized and sequined, and one is not. Looks more like the fruit hat Carmen Miranda. Okay, there is not one, but 2 flamboyant Napoleon Bonaparte's. Yeah, sequins, hand in shirts, everything. Okay, there's also a Pan's Halloween costume, like a Pan's Labyrinth, but Halloween costume. And I wish Doug Jones was in it, but it was not.
Pan's Labyrinth?
There's a Pan, so like a big horned guy with like goat legs.
Yeah.
And I call it Pan's Halloween costume as opposed to
Pan's. it's not the Doug Jones one.
No, because yeah. that wasn't until later. Okay, so then did you notice that, during the children walking towards the house, sleepwalking, calling scene, there's a kid who's in his full pajamas and he's got his pumpkin head on.
Nice.
He must have fallen asleep with it, I assume.
I like that. I like that.
There is a Greek Chorus or a Ronettes or a The Supremes trio. There are 3 black women in red sequins and beautiful bouffanted hair.
Yeah.
You'll find them in the bottom left of the corner during the Put a Spell on You scene.
Yeah.
They look amazing.
Right.
I love them the best. But the one I didn't see credited in the credits and my final on my long list, and you'll be so glad it's over, there's a lobster man.
I thought that was the guy with the lobster, the guy who pulls the lobster out, the one in the pirate
He's
costume.
He's not even part of the costume.
No. Thing?
Okay. So lobster man.
He had sort of a costume.
They don't even say he did have a pirate's outfit on.
I mean, that is a missed opportunity. A guy in a lobster costume getting other lobsters.
But they never mention lobster. They only say Scod.
Yeah.
So he should be Scod man.
What's the difference?
Beep, ba, 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 da, boop. Ba, da, ba, ba, da, boop. Ba, da, beep, ba, 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 da, boop. Ba, da, ba, ba, da, boop. Oh, man, we've been recording so long. How fast can we get through our shocks and plot moments? So sorry. I killed Lydia.
All right. Shocked and applauds.
Oh, you have to end because you're the one who picked the movie.
Okay.
I like that as a general rule, unless we're doing something weird. Do you want to go first this time?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
On both?
If you want to one and two, that's fine with me. Unless Lydia wants to call it. Do you want to do a round and then a round? Or
I'll go last because I also have a shocked and applaud for Hocus Pocus 2.
Oh, so
okay. We should just do our shocked and then our applaud and then move on to the next person.
Okay, cool. 1, 2, 3, go.
Shocked. There's some, I don't know. There's some places that you can catch that obviously the witches are using some contemporary reference that mm-hmm. they wouldn't know about. Okay. But it's still a good gag. So I'll give it that. And it's a kid's movie. So I'm not going to treat it too bad, but just seems like lazy writing to me. As far as the applaud, I would say that both the themes, I would say the theme of sisterhood in this movie is pretty cool because we see that not only with the witches, but we also see that with 2 generations of older brothers taking care of their sisters and sort of that bond or that relationship. And then also just the very powerful female antagonists in this. I know that it has to be witches, so the antagonist is going to be female, but they're still pretty strong characters. It's very difficult for a female to be considered funny.
Do you think
in media?
Do you think the word woman would work better than female? Because female generally determines biology, but a woman can be anybody who's gendered a woman.
There are child actors too that I would want to include.
Oh, okay. Okay, then yeah, females. I could accept female.
Girl, no.
Ladies.
I'm sorry, that was an overcorrection.
I appreciate it. I like to think about the full spectrum of. I mean, what we really don't get a very wide spectrum from Hollywood on what it that interpretation and what it really means. So, but I would say that as far as females who do comedy and women who do comedy and all those who consider themselves to be in the feminine,
beautiful,
would have faced a lot of hurdles to be considered funny, even though they obviously are. So, in the same light as Lucille Ball and I mean even Bette Midler, obviously she's done a lot of comedy too, but it's really good to see that representation in this movie.
Yeah, the men could be all replaced with women and it would still be a solid film, although I don't believe it passed the
Bechdel-Myers. Although I kind of wonder if we've
Bechdel
been test. I've seen places where it's referred to as the Bechdel-Wallace test.
Yeah, I always get the name wrong.
Yeah.
Bechdel test is Bechdel. What I should probably say.
The Bechdel test.
Yeah.
I did not keep an eye out for it to see if it did, because almost every scene has a man in it. But you
okay,
don't.
Okay. It did pass because the witches talk about getting the girl to each other.
Right. But that's while they're in their home
yeah.
with the boys in the cages.
The boys can't be there when they're doing it.
Right. They're not in the scene. They're not talking about, you know, any boys. They're not talking about any men. But like generally, maybe it's that it can't be the main character, that sort of thing. But though on the other side of this, there aren't any scenes where you have just two men talking to each other either.
There is a scene where the cat is talking to the dude as the chick.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Look, so, we're not going for a super feminist movie, yeah. Except for the fact that Jen has pointed out that they're very super strong female laffity-doos. Just extraordinary talent. Yeah?
Yeah. Okay, Naomi.
Okay, so my shocked is the whole virgin thing. I get that they need to mention it, but they could have, and I they pointed it out 8 times that I caught. It could have been mentioned. I would first and last, like I had to wait 300 years for a virgin to light a candle. That's pretty good if it hadn't been over our head like 6 other times. So like candle, dude lights the candle and then like drop it.
Right.
Because virginity is a concept. Your personal sexuality is something that evolves over time. And if we're dealing with it in a healthy way, it is something that you come into without like the big cleaver of the you've had sex and you've had not sex. Like the number of, I mean, and this is just my experience, the number of people that I have had to, I felt compelled to tell, and I got a big mouth, but rape victims who feel like they have lost their virginity is unreal. And so pushing this idea of like whether or not you are a virgin, like, it wrecks people's brains because it's much more of a spectrum and it just, it's stupid and it's way outdated. It was outdated in 93 and it is way gone now. And so like, I just don't want to push that idea on somebody, you know, as you grow into yourself, you're going to figure it out. The fact that anybody is talking to you about it who is not like your partner or like, okay, like a parent explaining to you how sex works or like an educator who you trust who's explaining it to you, but like a random person, like, extouting your virtue as like not having had heteronormative sex. People who are like, oh, well, you're a lesbian who's never had sex with a man, so you're still a virgin. Like you don't get it.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, so the whole virginity thing. I got a lot to say. This is a children's movie. It's bad. I don't like it. My applaud moment is the sisters, the synchronization, the costuming, the over the top in just the right way, the subtle humor, the little things, the like just how they interact and they swirl around each other like a like just it's It's so choreographed, but effortless. And it feels like you look at it and you're like, I am beholding something wonderful. And I never get sick of this movie because of it. Like, I just never do. I think it's not all Bette. It's also Kathy and Sarah even. And they just, all of them, I always feel bad for like the ditzy character. And I always feel bad for like the subservient kind of like look down upon person. Like, but they play them so well, and they are essentially evil characters. So it doesn't, I mean, like, you don't feel that bad. Like, okay. So just their aesthetic and the style and the delivery. And I would have 10 more movies with them just doing all of that. 100%. That's my applaud.
All right. So you know how my shocked moments are generally negative?
Yeah.
In this movie, it's a bit of a twist, because my shocked moment is something that I really liked. And it was like watching this, knowing that I had like a bunch of years, like just kind of in media criticism as a hobby and like taking that in and like seeing how movies come together. My shocked moment is how well this film is put together. Mm-hmm. Just like the cuts, the way that it was written, the jokes, like that first joke at the beginning where you have the setup of, oh, we're not doing anything evil. We haven't done anything wicked. We're just in here cooking. And then Sarah pops in saying, sucking the lives out of children. And then it cuts to them in nooses. It's just so well put together. Mm-hmm. There's like all of these little things that just like make the movie pop a lot more, make it feel more textured, make it feel like it's utilizing that film language to like, as like, it's really stretching that muscle. Like when I was talking earlier about how films that are very realistic in how they're made and how they're written and everything, it feels like I could watch this in a play and not really lose anything. But when you have a movie, there's a lot of visual elements that you could do when you're stretching that muscle. I feel like this movie does not miss an opportunity to stretch that muscle. So it's so well put together, so satisfying to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So
we've watched movies that have struggled with pacing a lot, and this movie does not.
Yes.
At all.
Yes. And my applaud moment is the planting and the payoff. Like, we see with Billy, his head comes off, mm-hmm. and then we see the dangers of coming up through a sewer grate. And then we see, like, you know, his fingers get chopped off and everything. And then you have the whole thing that I had mentioned with the headlight. Like, you were essentially being given information about what they're planning on doing to trick the sisters to getting away again, using technology and like just props in a film, mm-hmm. or props in anything. So there's a lot of little like plantings and payoffs, and like the fact that Winifred doesn't listen when someone calls her a hag at the beginning, and then like at the very end, it's like the thing that she's just like, I can't let this slide. Mm-hmm. I can't ignore it anymore. So there's just a lot of little things in the movie that, you know, really just the planting and the payoff is like perfect, because they give you information, but then it comes back around. So
that's gorgeous.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about Hocus Pocus 2, though, Lydia.
Okay, so
I mean, I get that it must be related to this film.
Right. It kind of takes place 29 years after the events of the first film. And like the only information that I'll give you is that you still have the virgin lighting a candle, but they don't talk about virginity all too often. I don't even think they bring it up as being anything big. I think maybe they mentioned it once, but you have this kid who lights a candle, black flame candle, brings the sisters back to life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the hijinks of trying to get them away. And you have some character development. You kind of go into how the sisters essentially got the book. And then at the very end, it kind of has this challenging of their sisterhood and how it all kind of comes down together. My shocked moment for the movie is not as kind on Hocus Pocus 2 as it was with Hocus Pocus 1, because it feels like a vehicle for starting a TV show, which they could totally do. And I think that that might be fun. But like, there were just some moments where it kind of feels a little bit forced, and it doesn't feel as flavorful as this movie.
I mean, plasticky, like you can reproduce it for the...
Right. And I don't think that's what they were trying to do, but it kind of came across that way. And maybe like it's really hard to make sequels stand out more than the first one, especially if that first one is such a big hit.
Well, and lightning in a bottle, you can't sequel out some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you cannot plan a cult classic. That's not how it works.
Right.
I mean, on the very rare occasion you can, but those are people who are like a spectacularly rare artist, like, but like I almost said Bill Waters, but like, I guess Calvin and Hobbes, but I mean a John Waters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he knows who he is and what he's doing all the time and what the cult of his, you know, Baltimore-ish flavor of fascination, morbidity, you know,
right.
Shamelessness.
Right. And I feel like the second one is there's just a little bit of that spark there. It just doesn't dazzle like the way the first one did.
But you'd still watch it.
Yeah. I feel like I need to watch it again. I've only watched it once and I don't really like forming opinions based on just like a single viewing. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's a lot that goes on with the newer characters that I like. If there's a TV show, I might watch it. Like the fact that there's going to be a musical, that kind of interests me. I think a TV show would be interesting because you can see what like Jay and Ernie get up to and like the reasoning for it. Maybe you have like Thora Birch come back as Danny and maybe she's like, you know, kind of into witchy stuff and everything. So, I mean, I think if there was a TV show and
she chooses feminism at a local community college.
Yeah. So now my applaud moment, and this is something that I think the second movie does kind of better than the first one, is the culture shock, having the differences in everything from when they were. Yeah, because they have a little bit more knowledge because of the time that they were in 1993. So they know that things are very different. Like there's like I know I mentioned this earlier, but there is a moment with Mary and vacuum that I really loved it.
I'm excited to see that. Whatever the hell it is, if it made you love it, I'm going to be so excited.
And I think like, so the first movie, everybody's just having such a fun time with the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell. And like Bette Midler, Kathy and Jimmy and Sarah Jessica Parker have just as much fun in the second one as they do in the first. And like, I think that really carries a lot of the film.
Good.
So, but it's weird having a sequel done by someone else, written by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of where it gets disjointed for me. So,
okay.
But yeah, I mean, watching the second one is probably something that I will do later on in this month of Halloween, which I think we're got to the end of October. We don't have any more Sean facts or anything. So
yeah, we're good to unpack. You know what now, applauders? Hey, girls, guys, them, theys, and entities, however you define yourself. I hope that you have gotten to the bottom of your trick-or-treat bag and you've eaten all the good ones and you're a little sad that you're at the end of the bottom of your bag, but then you notice that you got them fruit chew Tootsie Rolls, not the chocolate ones. You ate those or traded them, probably traded them a long time ago, but you got those fruit flavored ones and you pick it up and you're a little sad because it's not like premium Reese's Cups or Rolos or like Nerds or like Starburst or like, you know, the good candies, even like the caramel apple pops. But you grab that Tootsie Roll and you squeeze it a little bit and it's not hard. It's not that rock hard. Last year's Tootsie Roll. It's that good end of the bag candy. And that's the end of this podcast. And your next thing is probably up in a week or two. So thanks for joining us. Being amazing. And you can cut all this out.
Take a little moment before you start heading into holidays, whatever that means for you. You know, don't just jump into the next thing because that's what's on store shelves, but take some time to rest and determine what season it is for you.
I like that. How about you, Lids?
I don't know. Like, Halloween's one of my favorite holidays and fall's definitely my favorite season. So, like, Halloween and Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Yeah.
But for you, applauders, I hope you're doing well. You're looking real good. Mm-hmm. Like I can see you through everything, through time. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at you right now.
Crystal ball.
I'm being creepy.
My God, we've all seen the time knife.
Until next time, this is Jen McQuaid.
This is Lydia Malcolm.
This is Naomi McQuaid.
And this has been Shocked and Applaud, and still is Trick or Treat. Okay, I'll try that again.
Oh my gosh, smell my feet. Mary does that in the film. Sorry. Sorry. So tired.
And this is Shocked and Applaud. Thank you so much for listening.
Congratulations, applauder. You've reached the all-satisfying feeling of a successful conclusion to a month-long journey as we conclude our discussion of 1993's Hocus Pocus. Interested in even more of our guest appearances until we return? Check out our discussion with Collateral Cinema on 1984's Bolero. We also discussed Mulholland Drive with Collateral Cinema. You can find links to these appearances in this release's description. Hey, this is your audio engineer and clumsy Halloween party guest most likely to put a spill on you, Jen. Have we erred somewhere in our show that you think should be corrected, or just have some feedback you'd prefer not to share with the world? You can send us an email at shockedandapplaud@gmail.com or click the Contact Us link at the top of shockedandapplaud.com. We value you as a listener, and we'll take the time to address any concerns, questions, or general comments you might have that aren't worth sharing. We'll be taking a short break, and we'll be back November 8th for a brand new episode. It's our friend Madeline's pick this month, and we think it's going to be a great one. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay!
During the 20th anniversary screening of this film, Doug Jones revealed the... Oh, this is an insane thing, so I'm gonna wait on that one.
Okay.
Forgot to mark up my notes or Sean's.
We're doing it live.
Did you just, that guy who got fired us? Didn't he get fired?
Bill O'Reilly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
I think so. I don't know. Like, conservatives are weird about those sort of things. Like, we can't fire him. He goes ahead and says everything that we want to say, but can't.
Cut that.
I mean, we're cutting all of it.
Yeah, I guess so. But you're not wrong.
We're cutting it live.
Cutting it in the edit room.
I'm going to bleep it live.